only after that all the chaos comes in, like all the things you've got to do and the to-do lists and the, you know, the laundry and earning a living and everything like that. But kind of, so I couldn't write any other time but that, because there's just so much going on in my head.
Yeah, so you kind of go by a time schedule when you write, or are you just kind of like, I get up at 4 and write?
Lately I've started doing a word count because I'm so busy, so it's just start at 4 and just, I can't leave the room until there's like 2,000 words. It's just a rule.
Oh wow, yeah, that sounds like it's gonna...
Yeah, and I'm like, if this takes all day, then I'm gonna sit here all day. We're not moving.
So do you have a sign outside that says do not disturb writing in progress?
I don't, because no one in my house gets up early apart from me.
Okay.
I know they'll be fast asleep unless I wake them up, because I'm the one who has to wake everyone up.
Oh my goodness.
So until I turn up, they're asleep.
Okay, let's start with some of your favorite questions that you picked out. So the first one you got was, how did publishing your first book change your process of writing?
So that was a really big change, which came with the confidence, because when I wrote my first book, I'm sure other first-time writers would sympathize, but you really don't know if it's any good or not, and you're in this kind of state of terror. You haven't got reviews yet, you've had it edited, but you really don't know kind of if you're any good, what you're doing. And then you write your first book and you get a few people who love it, lots of people who like it, some people who don't like it, and then you kind of, you get a bit of perspective on your writing. You say, okay, I'm good at this. But you really realize, I can put out a book, I can do it professionally, I've done it, and then I can do the next one. So it really kind of gave me enormous confidence that I could just write the next one and put it out without all that terror, without all that kind of emotional trauma.
So was it on pins and needles when you were waiting for reviews?
The very first ones, absolutely. I mean, because you absolutely don't know. I mean, all of them could have said, this is rubbish, it's no good, she needs to kind of sit for another 10 years and learn to write. So you just don't know what they're going to say. And luckily for me, they were very positive, the first reviews, which gave me the confidence. But if they hadn't been, I'd have put the book in the drawer and just kind of given it another 10 years and disappeared. Yeah.
So, and to touch on that question, do you read the reviews that people post?
I do. I'm a bit obsessive about reviews. I really, really love them. I love the good ones. I love the bad ones. Because the good ones are often so generous. Like, it's people who really love literature and they write amazing things. But then the bad ones, like, I've had for each of my two books, I've had the ultimate bad one. Like, someone kind of literally ripped everything apart, kind of bit by bit, and it was almost a relief to get that review. So it's like, no one else can say anything worse than that.
Yeah.
Now, it's like, if you're going to say all the bad things you can, there you go. And it was said, and it's like, okay, I'm still alive.
Now, based on that reviews where they were ripping you apart, did that kind of change your perspective of how you would write your next book or what you would put into it?
It didn't at all, because that was very specific people who really reacted badly to my book for specific reasons, and kind of they gave the specific reasons why they didn't like it, and that there wasn't any reason for me to change my writing because of that.
Okay.
So really in balance, the good and the bad reviews just showed me that my book is for some people and it's not for other people, and that's the same for every single book. So it really gave me kind of a great sense of calm and happiness that I can just write what passion is bubbling in me.
Yeah.
And get out there, and some people will find it and love it, and other people, not for them.
Right. It's like you got it split, like half and half. Now, when you first published it, or I guess before you published it, what was the best money you ever spent between before and now?
Yeah, that was on a book cover. Definitely, because I'm independently published, so I publish myself, and there's a lot of things you can put money in, like editors, which I did spend money on editors, but for my first book, I have them here.
Go ahead and show us the woman behind the waterfall.
So this cover, I use a brilliant service called Readsy.com, where you have amazing freelance editors and book cover designers, and I'm a huge fan of the Japanese writer Haruki Murakami.
That sounds
And
familiar.
I love his covers. So I found out who'd done his covers and contacted them, and she was available, and I said, will you do my book cover? And it cost a lot of money, but I wanted a kind of my first novel, like the best possible book cover, so it looked amazing. And I'm incredibly happy with it, and it's got a lot of praise from people, and I took it along to my local bookstore, and they said, we love the look of it, we'll stock it. So it was a very, very good investment.
Yeah, I couldn't decide which one I wanted to read based on the cover. I'm like, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And then I was just like, okay, I'm just going to go with Unity.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, I like the cover, but the woman, the one behind the waterfall, that one, my husband's like, just get that one, it's pretty. I was like, I can't decide. And he's like, I was like, I can only have one.
Yeah, here's the other one. So here's the Unity game.
Yes, I love that. And I think it's because it's the bird, and I have this thing about birds and phoenixes. So, yeah, I was just, I couldn't decide. And it was a tough break. So I'm going to end up breaking down just to have both of them.
Okay. I won't complain.
I love books. So I have tons of books. Unfortunately, they're all packed away in 18 different tough boxes. So
yeah. It's a terrible passion to have because it's never ending. People are writing them right now. Even if you read your whole life, they're still coming out.
Yeah. As I said, Belle got lucky in Beauty of the Beast. She got her own library.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask, we already asked you about kind of how you balance with your family, but how do you balance what demands of being a writer and then being a reader? And then when you're done with your books writing them, do you go back and read them yourself from a viewpoint of the reader? Or
I don't reread them, no.
Really?
Because when you're editing, you have to read them so many times that by the time you launch them, you're so sick of the book. Like, you start off loving it more than anything you've ever loved, and then you end up just thinking, if I have to read that one more time, I'll die. So maybe in 30 years I'd like to reread them, but definitely not until then.
So how many times do you reread the books when you're editing?
Probably 20 to 30 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of times. I mean, that's from the first draft, because then you kind of rework a chapter, and then you really have to understand if the chapter is smooth. And then kind of at every major stage, you have to reread it.
That's a lot of... I didn't realize that it was a lot that goes into editing your own books and having to read that much.
Well, everyone has different levels of, I mean, I think some people just read them 5 or 6 times, but I mean, for me, it was
20 to 30.
And I spend about 5 years on each book, so that's a lot of editing drafts.
Yeah. Wow. And, oh, wow, this is a good one. So as a writer, who would you choose as your mascot, avatar, or spirit animal?
Yeah, that was a lovely question. So I brought a book with me for this. Short answer is it would be a wolf.
Okay.
And this was very much inspired by one of the most amazing books ever.
Oh my gosh.
Women Run with the Wolves.
That is beautiful cover.
Clarissa Pinkola Estes. It's all about your wild woman living inside you, who you have to be true to, you have to understand, and how you have to make good decisions for your life based on who you truly are, and not based on what society or other things people tell you, and how to be true to your wild self. Absolutely amazing woman, writer, and amazing book. I would very much hope that I have a kind of guiding wolf, keeping me to be true to all the things which I'm passionate about writing about, and not be tempted to go too commercial or this way, but definitely a wolf. And in my first novel, I actually put 2 or 3 wolves in the book in honor of her.
How did you, I guess, get led to the book? Was it something that you kind of saw in the bookstore, or was it just kind of like fate, like you just kind of literally ran into it?
when I meet people, because I'm such a book lover, when I meet new people, especially very interesting people, I love to ask them, what book would you recommend me? Or what's your kind of two favorite books? And I met a very interesting lady from Peru, very passionate lady. And I asked her this question, and she said, it's got to be The Woman Who Ran with the Wolves. So it sounded so great. I immediately went and bought it and read it. And it had a very strong effect on my first novel, because I finished my first novel and then read this book, which has a lot of Jungian psychology in it, and a lot of, she has a theory about the river below the river, which is all the kind of deep, deep, deep feelings in us.
Yeah.
And a lot of what she'd written in her book, I'd already put in my book, just kind of coming out of my deep
subconscious.
So it was absolutely extraordinary. It's like, okay, now I see where that came from.
So that's kind of almost like fate in a way.
Yeah, it certainly felt like that.
Yeah.
Then I went back and put in the wolves for her.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had that fate before.
I was getting tingles when I was reading it. It was just extraordinary. And there were several very direct things and archetypes that I'd used. And I'd never studied Jungian psychology, but I realized kind of how powerful it was that I was kind of churning my subconscious into this book, and here she's saying, this is what's in the subconscious.
Oh, so, wow. I think I'm going to have to... Sorry, I'm going to turn to the sun's not directly in your face. I think I'm going to have to add that to my list.
I think every woman should read this. Absolutely amazing book.
And it has a beautiful... And her covers look similar to your covers, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the abstract aesthetic, it looks very similar. Yeah, your covers look the same. So, what does literary success look like to you?
So that's a question I ask myself a lot, because I'm an independently published writer, and I think kind of at what point am I successful? Because it's very hard to earn money when you're writing. You can sell kind of, even if you sell 50,000 books, it's still not enough to live on. It's enough to maybe pay the mortgage for 2 months.
Yeah.
But it's not enough to live on. So I've thought a lot about it. And of course, there's lots of writers who are only successful after they're dead, and they had no success when they were alive. So there's kind of all different levels. And then lots of writers who don't write things of much quality, who sell millions. So for me, literary success is having people read my book and moved by my book and affected by my books. Could be one person, could be
thousands of people,
3 million people, that's great. But I think if people have found my work and been changed and touched by my work, then that's worth me spending my life writing books.
Okay. And that sounds interesting that you said that, because I've noticed that whenever I go to pick up a book to read, if it's something that I don't normally read, usually the author has something in there that's kind of like a light bulb going off, and it usually resonates a really big part of something with me. And I've seen, this only happened to me maybe a couple of times, but I've had those authors whose, their books are so great, I've literally become their stalkers. So every time they publish something, I grab it. You know, I don't read the synopsis, I just grab the book, because whatever they write, I know it's going to be something that I need to read, or something that I want to read. So that's great that you
dream about people like you.
Yeah. and I think that's why my husband's like, you need to start buying ebooks. And yeah. I have over 26,000 ebooks right now.
Right. Oh, that's a lot.
And I reread the same books multiple times. So even if I know it line by line, I still do it, which drives him crazy, because I'll walk through the house kind of repeating the lines. And I guess this is kind of going into you being an indie author versus you actually signing with a company. So I know I probably didn't have that question on there, but what made you choose to be an indie author versus signing with a company? And then how do you market your own books since you are an indie author?
So I don't know if I chose to be an indie author, but I came very close to being published by a publishing company. I had an agent who liked my work, and she tried to sell it, and several publishers were interested in it, but in the end it got rejected by them all.
Okay.
But they'd all given very positive feedback and saying kind of, this is a great book, but not for us. So I had enough confidence from that to decide to publish it myself. And when I looked into indie publishing, it just looks so interesting and so cutting edge. And I'm an entrepreneur before I started writing. So I thought, I can do this. I can, why not invest in myself, make the investment and put my own work out? So that was, I guess for me, the choice was to write several more books and try to publish them traditionally or just put it out there. And I thought, I'm not going to just wait if I think it's something of quality. But it was a great decision. I'm so happy I did because I have full control over all my writing, all my creative output. You know, I chose the cover. I wrote the blurb. I control all my marketing. It's absolutely great. And you know, I have sales in real time. If someone buys a book, I see they've immediately bought a book, which is great. So I think traditional authors have to wait kind of every quarter to see what they've sold.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, so versus indie and then being with the publisher, what do you think you would have been missing out on if you would have went with the publisher?
Yeah, I think certainly when you're with a traditional publisher, if they promote your book a lot, then you get a lot of benefit from that. You can be in all the bookshops. So I'm in about kind of 20 or 30 bookshops in the UK,
okay.
which is good, but I could be in hundreds, which would be very nice. What else?
Are you in bookshops here in the US? Because I know that you're on Kindle, which
yeah.
You know, everyone has a Kindle, but
yeah.
There are those few people who kind of just refuse and they have to have an actual book, you know, to
yeah.
feel the pages. So, and I know we only have really one major bookseller that's kind of like everywhere, which is Barnes & Noble, because they've Books a Million is
yeah.
not everywhere, and the other bookstore was kind of closed down, so.
Yeah. No, I'm certainly available through Barnes & Noble. I'm available kind of to order through any bookstore.
Okay.
And Amazon, of course. But I really don't think, I mean, that's a great question. I really don't think I've missed out on very much through traditional publishing. Because I think the main thing it gives you is kind of, it gives you the authority to say, I'm a very good writer that's been through the best editing process. But nowadays you can use freelancers that have exactly the same people editing your book, doing your book covers, and the same distribution channels. So perhaps apart from being stocked in hundreds of bookshops, I don't think
yeah.
I missed out on anything.
Okay, and so, with, I guess, their marketing strategy and kind of being an indie author, there's tons of us readers who love having indie authors and will actively seek out finding indie authors. So, and I'm one of those people where I've noticed that there is a difference in the way a book is kind of formatted or written from being an indie author and being a published author. It's almost kind of, and I hate to say the word cookie cutter, but you can always tell an indie author because their writing is way more diverse and sometimes way more in depth and the book are longer.
Yeah.
And you have more twists and turns than you normally would. So in that sense, do you feel that you get a lot more marketing from the indie readers than you probably would have with publishing? Because there's so many people that like indie books and actively seek them out instead of going through publishers to look for books.
Yeah, I think so, because I think people who understand that indie authors do everything themselves really value that and are willing to kind of put a lot more into supporting them. And certainly on social media, I get tons of kind of really supportive tweets
yeah.
and things like that, which is very moving. It's really great. And they're kind of spreading the word, because word of mouth is so incredibly important for indie authors.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you mentioned the diversity in indie publishing, because that's such a massive part of it, that there are no borders. There's no one sitting there saying, oh, that won't fit this reader
yeah.
demographic, so we're only going to publish this. There's nothing. And I really think that in indie publishing, the most interesting kind of barrier-breaking work is going to come through indie publishing. I mean, it's when you take down any limits to what can get out there, you're going to
yeah.
get something very, very different. And it's indie writing that's going to be shaping the market.
Yeah.
And really, passionately believe that.
I think so too, because like I said, the books that have really hit me when I was in a spot in my life where I needed some, you know, uplifting, they're all indie authors. And I can't say and I can't say that I honestly can't even tell you the last time I probably read a book that was published by a publishing company, because my bookshelf is filled with indie authors. So, and if the bookstore doesn't have them, I'm like, I need this book. You need to get this book. Yeah. So, and that's the one thing I know is that indie authors, it's like you kind of, it's reading their writings. It's like you can kind of not only feel like you're there with them while they're writing the book, it's just, it's a whole different level of connection, I think, with indie authors. So I'm not sure what it is that indie authors put in their books, but there's a whole different level of connection where even if the book is something that you would have never read, there's going to be some part in that book where it kind of just reach out and grabs you and like feels like it just unzipped your heart from being tied up. So I don't know how to really explain it. It's kind of like almost being free, you know, like a phoenix being reborn. And that's kind of how I feel that in the author's writing is. That's so different from publishing.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear.
Yeah. That's why I said, like, with your book, Unity, it was just kind of like, I need this book. And it happened to be on a day where I was just really sad about work. And my husband was like, you're a phoenix, you know, you're supposed to. And I was like, I don't feel like a bird today. And then I happened to see the book cover and it was just like, okay, well, I think that's a sign right there, you know, and then the title. So that's why I chose Unity.
Oh, thank you.
It was like a sign, like, I have to read this book.
But you're absolutely right that there's, with indie books, you're far closer to the writer.
Yeah.
Because there isn't a massive publishing structure and an agent in between. The author's written the book, they put it straight out there, and also the reviewers, the readers, can make such an impact on the writer. You can tweet something that'll suddenly make them go viral. You can tweet them and then they'll find like 10 more amazing readers who love them, and you can write a review that will make a big difference to sales on Amazon. You can really, really help their career and help their writing and help them kind of emotionally with support. And with traditionally published writers, it's kind of, you don't have that impact at all. They're not kind of directly in contact with the readers.
Yeah, that's something that I've noticed, that they're not.
Yeah.
And I'm curious though, just because of what I've read in the author's book, how much of yourself is actually in the book? Because from reading, I would say there's probably at least 75%, but I'm sure that varies from author to author. So how much of yourself have you put inside your books?
In a way, all of myself, because the ideas definitely come from my heart, because I can't write a book unless I'm burning with some question about it. So from that point of view, it's all from me. So far as characters, I'm very careful not to put too many character traits into them. I'm kind of, if I have something which I'd like to put into a character, I'm very specific about this is a different character and I'm using this trait to kind of add this element to them. And so far as, I'd say the one thing which I definitely put in is emotions. So I'm a very emotional person, so I have very strong emotions about different things, and then I can take those, what I remember how to describe the emotions, and put them into a different situation. So kind of, if I remember feeling incredibly sad, then something different will happen to my character, but I'll kind of channel all that sadness I had and put it into their character. So that's definitely from me.
So that's the, sorry.
Oh, not at all.
I think I just inhale pollen. So is there an emotional pull when you're writing characters?
Always. There's always an emotional pull. I mean, I think you have to love all your characters and root for them, even if they're the bad ones. You have to kind of root for them doing the bad stuff. And so put your emotions into them. I don't think there aren't any of my characters, good or bad, that I haven't kind of put my own emotions and kind of supported them doing what they do.
Barely. I'm going to step in. So I had to grab my water. Normally I don't stay out this long, but I'm like, oh, it's nice today.
Oh, it looks so pretty out there.
Yeah, they just redid the lake, so We have a lot more, and I'm recording it, so I have notes.
All right, great.
Yeah. Now, the two last questions that you have here, what was your favorite childhood book, and why would that have been your favorite?
Okay. So, I brought them along.
Oh, do show.
My favorite childhood book was Titus Groan by Marvin Peake.
I've never heard of that.
Okay, it should be heard of. A very amazing, quite gothic, strange, wonderful book about a young man growing up in a castle. Very, very descriptive, incredible vocabulary. It just, it's a trilogy, so there's Titus Groan.
Wow.
Brought them all. Gormenghast, which is the name of the castle, and Titus Alone.
So how did these become your favorite childhood books?
I was given them as a present. I'd never heard of them. I was given them as a present one Christmas, and it was my favorite present was always books. So I was kind of immediately kind of forgot about Christmas and started reading them. And they just completely captivated me. It was this extraordinary world that I immediately wanted to live in. There was a kind of angry teenage girl, there was a kind of confused young man, there was kind of dreadful plotting, conniving people, there were it was just an incredible array of characters in this amazing setting, and most of them were bad, which was just kind of amazing to read about. It wasn't sickly sweet at all, and it just made me realize that you can create a completely different world, and a world that your readers would really, really like to live in.
So is that kind of what gave you the writing bug, was reading those books, or did it happen way before?
I don't ever remember not having the writing bug. I remember kind of my earliest memories of saying, I want to be a writer, and writing little stories and poems. So I don't know what age it actually kicked in, but I don't remember before saying it. So that I think that gave me a kind of level that I always wanted to achieve, kind of if I could write something like this, then my life has been worth living. So, and I recently I've got these looking very new because I've just given them all to my daughter, so I hope that she's going to love them.
I wish my mom would buy me books for Christmas or birthday. Okay. Or something. My husband's the only one that buys me books.
Oh, maybe they think you've got enough.
Well, my daughter buys me Belle dolls because I love Beauty and the Beast, but I've got books on my nightstand, books on my floor, books on my... There's literally books that you can't walk anywhere in my apartment without tripping over a book.
That's a good house.
Yeah, I mean, there's books even in the bathroom, so yeah. Now, this is a very curious question that I have, because as I said, I sometimes get to the point where I'm like, I think I'm going to write, and then all of a sudden I just stop because I can't go any further. So,
yeah.
And I know some people call it writer's block. Other people don't call it writer's block. They just kind of, you know, call it something different. So what would you call it? And have you ever had that point where you're writing a book and then you just kind of can't really go on, but you want to finish?
So I've never had that. But imagining that I might have it, I think what I would do, I wouldn't call it writer's block. I'd just call it kind of, I've temporarily run out of ideas.
Yeah.
And so what I do, because I passionately believe that writers should combine, not just sit in a room writing, they should also do interesting things. So my solution to that would be maybe change job, maybe, for example, go and work in, get a job as a barista in your cafe and see what it's like making coffee. You know, 300 cups of coffee for people, ungrateful people every day, and kind of see how that feels.
Oh, or wow.
Go and join the fire service for 6 months, or go and live in another city for a few months, or just do something which literally gives you a different experience that you could then write about. Because if everything's run dry, then you can go and do something different and then just practice writing about that. So that would be my suggestion, because sometimes our lives kind of get in a bit of a rut.
Yeah, they definitely do. Now, have you ever done that, taken on a position and kind of written from that standpoint?
I haven't specifically done that for the writing, because I've never had the writer's block, but I'm always looking to do different things. And for example, something I'm doing at the moment is I'm doing some training so that I can teach English to refugees in London, which cool. I imagine would be kind of quite inspiring for writing. But that's kind of something new that I'm doing. And then after that, I'll try something else new. So I definitely plan to keep on doing new things in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, so that would be, wow, I didn't really think about people writing from their experience. I'm a born homebody, so my experience is just literally reading, so.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be something big. It could be, I don't know, even picking up litter in the forest or something, or bird watching, or, you know, something, could be something small.
Yeah.
Or joining a fan group of something, and then you're kind of inspired by how crazy the fans are. Things like that.
Yeah, fans can get really crazy about their books, even to the point of reacting their characters and, you know, making them stay alive. So I have a few more questions I like to ask. And since we're on kind of like what aspiring writers do to kind of avoid having that block, what advice would you have for aspiring writers, or what traps do you see that they can kind of fall into?
Yeah. So for aspiring writers, my advice is write as much as possible, but also do it with some little goals. For example, set yourself a goal. If you haven't written anything big, then set yourself a goal of writing a short story. And maybe it's 1,500 words long, and you give yourself 3 months to do it and edit it. But set yourself a goal and achieve that. And then you'll have done your absolute best. You'll have produced the best short story you've done. And then you set yourself a new goal. You can put it to magazines or publish it on Wattpad or put it anywhere. And then after that, do something longer, maybe a novella, and then kind of build up your skills, but do it with goals that you can feel satisfied about. Because with words, you can just get lost in kind of thousands and thousands of words, which you're not sure what to do with.
Right.
So keep it manageable. Write a short story, then write a novella. Then if you're ready, write a novel, but not a very long one. And just keep building up your professional skills.
Now, I want to ask about, as far as, like, you know, your writing goes, is because you have a couple of questions here that I'm actually very curious to know about, because you seem like you're extremely energetic. So does writing kind of, like, energize you, or does it kind of, like, exhaust you and whatnot? And I know you said that you kind of start at 4 before everybody else gets up. So by that time, does your day kind of get chaotic where you can write or you can't?
Yeah. So writing definitely energizes me. Like if I've done my writing in the morning, I'm literally happy for the rest of the day. Not that I won't get kind of grumpy, but
right.
Yeah, happy. I know this day is a good day if I've done my writing. So I'm very energized. Marketing is quite tiring. Marketing takes my energy a lot. So because there's no end to marketing. You do kind of 2 or 3 hours, and then there's still kind of endless hours that you could be doing. So that's not very satisfying. Whereas if you've done your 2,000 words for the day, then you actually feel extremely good. You say, I've created something good. So definitely energized.
Okay. Now, I know that your books are very separate, but in the future, do you plan on writing standalone books or kind of making them a series, or is it kind of like both? Or
I don't plan a series yet. I could, because my books take such a long time to write. They take about 5 years to write, so that would be like a 20-year series.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not planning that yet. If it was, I've thought of idea of maybe a children's series, which would be faster. So that would be very fun. And children love to follow characters through. So
yes.
I think I'd really like to do that in the future. But for adult books, I like to kind of, I have such such separate ideas that I like to keep them in standalone books.
Okay. Now, what, they have a curious question on here. So I'm dying to know, is what literary pilgrimages have you been on?
I've been on a few. Well, most recently in the US, I went to Edith Wharton's house, The Mount.
Okay.
which is amazingly beautiful. It's a house that she actually designed herself and kind of supervised it being built. So it's like literally the perfect writer's house, and it's in beautiful grounds. It's, I've forgotten, it's not in New York. It's
up north.
Maybe it's a state next to New York. I've forgotten.
Pennsylvania.
Could be. Get in trouble for forgetting.
It's okay. I live here and I don't even know my geography. Yeah. I honestly don't know what's next door in New York. I don't know. I mean, if it was out west, I could be like, yeah, I definitely know what state it is, but I have no idea.
Yeah. Anyway, it's really, really beautiful and kind of preserved as she had it. And she had loads of, she was very social. She had loads of dinner parties. So there's kind of, here's the table where she and loads of other writers, Henry James, used to sit around and talk about American literature. So that was very special. And there's lots and lots in England. But the place where I grew up, Charles Dickens used to live, which was lovely. I've been to see Jane Austen's house where she died, and she was buried in Winchester, okay, in the UK. And I've been to the summer house where Virginia Woolf used to invite lots of writers in Sussex. That's very, very beautiful.
Oh, I'm so jealous right now.
In England, it's very easy. You kind of, there's lots of literary places you can go, and someone used to have a summer house here or live there.
Now, have you seen the Margaret Mitchell house?
I haven't. I would love to.
You know what, Saz? I've been in Atlanta for 4 years, and I worked downtown, like, right next door. Well, I guess, like, three blocks over, and I've never been there.
Oh, wow. Was it a big house? Was she very successful, wasn't she?
She was. It was just kind of like the house that she started writing Gone with the Wind in. Okay. And if I remember correctly, the bank, Federal Reserve, the house is literally like you have to actually look for it. If not, you'll kind of pass by. Wow. So it's not like this. It's kind of like almost like an apartment building, mm-hmm, like kind of one of those old Victorian houses, but kind of.
Yeah.
Not spread out, but just kind of like compact.
That's the kind of house writers start off in.
Right. And it still has a little picket fence in the front. And I believe it's like a little beige color. And there's a sign that says Margaret Mitchell House. But most people are passing by so fast that you don't really know it's there. But I've been on all of the other Gone with the Wind stuff. But it's the only house that I know around here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And normally you'll know when they have something going on because the line is literally wrapped around the house. People are trying to get at.
I'll Google that after a chat.
Yeah. One of these days I'm going to actually get out there and kind of go see what's going on. So
it will probably happen if you leave Atlanta.
Yeah.
And then you'll come back just to go to it.
Yeah, because I think that's what happened in Savannah. I left and then I go back. So that's kind of, I guess, how it happens. And so I know you mentioned that each one of your books takes about 5 years, mm-hmm, to write. So is that because of the editing and then choosing the cover, or is that so that you have time to make sure that you have all of your aspects in the book that you want to have?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a big combination of things. They take a long time to write, like, apart from the first draft takes maybe up to 1 year, and then editing takes a very long time, kind of the second draft, the third draft, and then you bring in different editors. And then the book's so important to me, so I take a long time to think, do I want to make that change or not? All the cover things take, that's all the fun bit. So that's maybe 6 months at the end. That's all already kind of you're just on a high because you finished the book. So that's a very nice process.
Now,
also, you're never just writing a book. There's always life going on as well.
Right. Kids, animals, husband,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and I'm curious because I know that there's always a lot of parts that get taken out of the books. So was there anything that when you were editing that you took out that maybe that you thought maybe you should have probably left in, or that you would probably put in a deleted scenes area?
I've got lots of deleted scenes. And, I think I write the novels I write are not very conventional. They're a little bit strange because I'm trying to write something different, and but I have to find the balance between writing something different and writing something readable.
Right.
So I usually kind of go through and take out the strangest bits just to kind of tone it down a little bit. So certainly in my first book, I took out quite a big section of that just was kind of going extremely abstract.
Yeah.
And people already think the book's very abstract, so I'm quite glad I did that. And in my second novel, I have part of it is set on a different planet. And my readers are divided into people who love that section and people who hate that section. So I really had to make a compromise, and I took out about a good third of that section.
Oh, no!
I don't know which way you'll fall. I'll have to ask you.
Yeah, I am.
More of that. Well, there is a lot more of that, but it's not in the book.
Yeah, I wouldn't let people where I am. When I'm at work, I'm like, I need to move to another planet. You know, and that's always my thing is like, since I have the iPhone and the iWatch, my daughter and I are constantly looking at the Sky app, trying to find a planet that we can, that we can build a spaceship and go live on. But since they're, none of them are, you know, have a habitable, we're like, maybe there's a whole other planet in another galaxy. So yeah, I mean, I always find that the books that go to other planets is kind of like basically seeing a different way of life, you know, even if just like, you know, people come to the US, they see how Americans are, they go to London, they, you know, they see the difference. Like someone will say, you know, put this in the boot of my car, and I'm looking around like, what's a boot?
Yeah.
Or they're like, do you want to lift? Are you going to use, I don't like the lift. What's the lift? You know, and my husband's from the Midwest, and we call shopping bags here bags, but they call them sacks out there. Right. Or in the South, we call it soda, and North, they call it pop. So it's just kind of like, yeah, no matter where you go in the U.S., something's going to be different. And, you know, you go overseas, something's going to be completely different. Like, we have steak and lobster, and Australia has surf and turf.
Yeah.
I was like, what's a surf and turf? Steak and lobster. I'm like, why don't you just say steak and lobster? And women are called Sheilas or something.
I think. Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah. Because that's a name here for a person. So I always think that it's kind of like seeing a different culture, not just a different role. And you can kind of learn more. But then again, I'm also a weird person that reads about aliens, too, and watches horror movies at, you know, 3 a.m. in the morning. So
I couldn't do that.
Watch three horror movies at 3 a.m.?
Couldn't do it. I could read all night, but I couldn't watch a horror movie. My imagination's too active. I'd never forget it.
And I normally don't, but the movies are so, there's a difference between, I think, when I read versus seeing the movie, because it's like, it's forced in my head, but when I'm reading, it's kind of like the city and the scene is slowly building up inside of my head, and I can, unless the actor puts in how the person's voice is, it's like I can kind of picture. But if they say he has a gruff or a rough voice, I mean, there's different levels of having a rough voice, so it's kind of like, I can make this guy's voice rough, and, you know, either a grating rough or like a smoker's rough. So that's, I think that's probably why I watch horror movies, is because it's like, but it's on, but I'm not actually watching it, if that makes sense. Like, I'm glued to my book, but I can, it's like background noise. So
okay, whatever works for you.
Yeah.
It's quite original, though.
Yeah, I'm a weird one. So do you have anything that you do when you're writing? Like, you have music or TV or aromatherapy? Like, do you have any kind of other...
I like to create a kind of closed atmosphere. So I draw the curtains, and I often light candles. So I like to kind of create an atmosphere where there's a bit of flickering light, and where it's kind of, it feels like everything's possible. So it's kind of just my imagination and this flickering light. So that's a very good atmosphere for me to write in.
That sounds like a good atmosphere to read into. When you're writing, like, other than creating your atmosphere, do you have like, I'm trying to think of, I don't want to say statues, but I guess like ceramics, or just kind of like something that's helping, like if you are like some of your other planets, like do you kind of have pictures of like the solar system, you know, like just kind of like some props to help you create the scene?
Well, with my books, I have very large boards where I pin things on them. For example, I have the main ideas pinned on, and often images pinned on, really just to kind of keep me focused on what the point of the book is. So I have those, but the main thing I need is just an enormous cup of coffee.
And how big is this coffee cup?
It's big. I bought it in New York, so it's a big one.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say New Yorkers and their coffee cups.
Yeah.
I think we need to get you a big Bubba.
That's good.
I don't know what it translates into in the I'm horrible with friends, but it's about 64 fluid ounces of coffee.
Wow. Okay. You see, I could write all morning with that.
Yeah, my husband has two of those that he takes to work with him every morning. 64 wow. ounces. Yeah, he just needs an IV.
yeah.
So now I've seen, and I've only seen this on television, and so I'm curious, when your books are, you know, when you get them published, mm-hmm. now do you get a box of your books in the mail, or is that only from traditional publishers, or what happens after the book is published? Like, what is the process?
Mm-hmm. So the technology that's usually used nowadays is print on demand. So that means if you order a box of books, you get a box of books.
Okay.
So I always order a box of books. I have for mine, I have hardbacks, I have paperbacks, also got audiobooks and ebooks. So for each of my books, I order maybe two boxes of hardbacks, two boxes of paperbacks, and then that's for reviewers, for journals, things like that. So you definitely get the magic.
Yeah.
You ordered it yourself. But kind of having the first box arrive, it's very, very special feeling.
It's like being on Christmas and just kind of, yeah, do you have a process definitely. That you do before you open the book?
Yeah, but you've been through, usually you go through a few copies first, because you you approve the book, then you order one just to check everything. Sometimes the spine's off or the print isn't centered. So you go through, I think, usually two or three rounds of getting it exactly right before you order the box.
Okay, so, and then when they're sending these books for you to go through, do you, mm-hmm. does that include having to read the whole book through too?
No. Okay. They just flip through to make sure everything's kind of, nothing, like there's not one page missing or something like that.
Okay. I was just curious because, you know, like if you're going through the book and you're kind of like, oh, there was a typo right there, you know, or, you know, a misprint. Yes. So I was wondering if you had to, because that would add on to your 20 to 30 readings and make it, you know, a little bit longer.
No, by that time, if you find a typo, it's expensive to change it.
Oh, wow.
Redo the typesetting and then re-upload it. So there's definitely a point where you have to say, unless there's something really bad with it, this is final.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, Lenore, I really appreciate this interview. Again, I apologize that I couldn't get it recorded, like video wise, but it's going to take me a little bit longer to write it up and get everything in here. So, which, like I said, my week is books to review.
Yeah. Like, well, lots of them. No rush at all. It's whenever it works for you. I mean, this has been really fun.
Yeah, and I really enjoy talking to you and seeing your library behind you. I mean, because that bookshelf is just massive. I mean, it looks like it's up to the ceiling.
We've just moved house, and there's like, I'm putting bookshelves in every room.
Oh, wow. Now, is that something that's like ceiling to floor? Because it looks like it's up the ceiling.
Ceiling to floor. Yeah.
Wow.
In every room, ceiling to floor.
Oh my god, and I love the curvature on the side of it too.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's beautiful.
Well, any room with books is beautiful, in my opinion.
That is true. Any room that is full of books, even if they're stacked up and turned into a bed, it's still amazing. I've even got my 6-year-old into books, so she has her own bookshelf now.
Yay.
Now, I am curious because I did not, and I'm sorry, I jumped from question to question. You mentioned earlier that you were possibly thinking about writing a children's novel.
Yeah.
Kind of what gave you that idea to not only do adult, but kind of go in the section of children?
I just like branching out with my writing. I want to try lots of different genres. I tried to put a little bit of science fiction in the Unity game. I just want to try everything. I'm doing a novella at the moment, and I'm going to try a children's novel, and then some short works, because I know Amazon's very big on now short books, so I thought I'd try that. So I just don't want to limit myself in any way. Kind of with every new book, I want to challenge myself in two or three different ways.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it might not work out. I might find that I'm no good at children's books, but I'm going to try it.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend trying it. I don't think I have the animation for children's books. I mean,
lovely.
It was great talking to you.
Have a lovely weekend, Nicole.
You too. Thank you.